Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, guest host Sarah Gooding and I discuss WordPress news, remote work, and working with a young family. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the Post Status Club multiple times per week. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 650 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Valet. Valet helps keep your clients happy and coming back. They offer expert services and keep the websites they manage functioning flawlessly. They offer preventative care that provides peace of mind around the clock. For more information, check out their website at valet.io, and thank you to Valet for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian, and I'm the editor of PostStatus, and today I have a special co-host.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gooding. I work as a WordPress journalist for Audrey Capital, and I write for WP Tavern.
And welcome to the Post Status Draft podcast. Today, we're going to discuss everything we know. That's the old title. Today, we're going to talk about WordPress news and how we make it. So, Sarah, as my resident favorite frenemy, I'm happy to have you on the podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So I thought it would be fun to talk about what we do at WP Tavern and Post Status, but not just to do a bunch of navel gazing, and instead try to frame this in a way that helps put our jobs in perspective to listeners, many of which are what I call like WordPress professionals, so make their living or some form of living at least with the web and using WordPress and stuff. And a lot of our listeners would probably like for one of us or one of our counterparts in another publication or whatever to write about them. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about how we do what we do, how we do our sourcing and advice for people pitching stories, all that kind of stuff. So that's our game plan for today for all our listeners. And I guess let's just start with, give us, I guess, your 1 minute intro of how the heck you got into this, like your road to WP Tavern.
Okay, I guess a quick summarized version is I used to work as a WordPress developer, and then I started writing for WPMU.org when they first launched their blog. I didn't really know anything about them, and I really didn't know too much about WordPress. So I just started writing about everything that I was learning. And I think I worked with them for about 4 years part-time while I also built WordPress websites through my company that I started with my husband. And then I moved to WP Tavern full-time writing just WordPress news. I think that was 3 years ago.
So we had actually a pretty similar introduction to writing about WordPress because you mentioned how you wrote about it as part of the way you learned. And that's pretty much the same way that I got into it. And then how long were you a developer and working with your husband before you went to WP Tavern? Like how long were y'all working together?
I think we started building websites for people in 2008. So about 8 years, about 8 years ago. But before that, I had built some websites with Drupal and Magento, just about everything before I focused on WordPress. So I was kind of all over the place, mostly doing front-end work.
And I've always considered you a little bit of a BuddyPress homer because you've always seemed to really like BuddyPress. So did y'all do a lot of client work that was with BuddyPress?
Yeah, we started before they even had like the first release. I told my husband about it just in passing, and he was the one who kind of did all of our sales and people meeting at the time. And he was talking to one of his friends who was the owner of a bar, and he said, oh, we can make you a social network for your bar. And then he came home and said, hey, I sold a website today. I was like, oh, great. What's it going to be? And he told me, we're going to use BuddyPress to build a social network. And I was like, are you out of your mind? Because I mean, I had no idea. I didn't know anything about BuddyPress. And this is when you had to like read a long tutorial for getting it going. And it was just a ton of work and very, very new. But that was my first foray into social networking with BuddyPress. And from there, we just started building more social networks.
Cool. And do you, I assume you still utilize a lot of what you learned building websites for people, for client work and whatnot, in your day-to-day work. Is that something that really sticks with you as you like decide on what stories are interesting and what's going to be useful for people, or how do you approach that type of stuff?
Yeah, I think it really helps with your, I mean, I'll go and scan the WordPress plugin directory, and it's, I guess I just kind of operate on instinct as far as what is a good plugin or what's going to be a hit with people who are building websites. And that really comes in handy having done that client work in the past.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into a little bit about how we frame our publications, because I think most observers would like to say that we target a pretty similar audience, and I actually don't think that's very true. And obviously there's some overlap, but I think that y'all tend to approach a much wider audience than I do. So like when y'all are writing stories, who are you trying to target with those?
I think we target everyone from, you know, a casual WordPress user to people who are working on core, people who are building things with WordPress, launching businesses on WordPress. We kind of target everybody. I think Jeff and I are aiming for the Tavern to be WordPress paper of record. So we write about anything that happens in the community, whether it's a business side or core or, you know, just any kind of stories that have anything to do with WordPress. So it's really very broad.
But for y'all, sometimes that definitely gears more towards like site owners that are using WordPress as a tool but aren't invested in it beyond the fact that their website uses WordPress, right?
Mm-hmm. Occasionally.
I'd say that's one of the biggest places where I don't really go after that genre very much, because I am assuming that someone is invested in WordPress beyond it being part of their business. Like, I go after some people like that. Like, if WordPress is the primary tool that they use, mm-hmm. Maybe they're a membership website or something for a whole different industry, but WordPress powers all of that, then that's the type of person that's going to be a little more invested in their WordPress website than, say, they own a law firm and they use WordPress as part of their, you know, marketing strategy or something.
Yeah, I think that we were kind of overlapping a lot more before you really started hitting the industry side of things harder. I think you're still figuring out what post status was going to cover, and I remember we were always racing to beat each other with stories and all of us writing about the same thing all the time. So, and then I noticed that you kind of shifted your focus more towards people who are working in this industry and less on just the news that's coming out for regular folks.
Yeah. I had to give up a few things that I think are natural tendencies for writers, which are getting it out first and also trying to get as many eyeballs as you can on the story. Mm-hmm. And those were pretty directly related to how I was paying myself to write about WordPress, because I did that by making the content exclusive to people that paid the yearly membership and all that stuff with the club. And the delivery there is not a timely one. Like, it's based on email. So it's not something where something comes out in the morning and I have a story out mid-morning. It's like something could come out yesterday and I send out the email tomorrow, you know?
Right.
So it stopped being, I had to beat that quality out of my brain to want to get it out first. And that also has influenced, I guess, the way I approach the story. And you certainly have a straight reporting kind of mindset. Like, I very rarely read a story that you write where you influence what people's thoughts are going to be on it a little bit, but for the most part, you're not going to say like, this is good because, or this is bad because. You kind of leave that to the reader. What was your motivation for approaching it that way?
I think I felt I would have a broader influence if I was letting people think for themselves, and letting people make their own conclusions. I certainly have a lot of convictions about, different, you know, things in the WordPress world, but I want the Tavern to be a publication that people can read and not feel like they're being influenced one way or another, but just a place where they can find out what happened, when, and what kind of implications it has.
Do you think the story selection itself is kind of inherently influencing those things anyway? I mean,
yeah,
that's my counter argument, I guess.
I mean, yeah, it probably does. It's not, I mean, writers write about what they're interested in or what catches their attention. So, I mean, that can't be avoided entirely. But we try to get to everything, so.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a pretty, we don't have a lot of things in the WordPress world that are two-sided, like a he said, she said mentality. It's pretty rare that something like that happens. It's usually a one-sided thing. So I know, I mean, I've gone both routes with this, right? So I'm kind of curious just to get your perspective on it, because I tend to find my voice better if I'm both trying to deliver the facts as thoroughly as I can. Like, I'm not going to avoid facts because it hurts my argument or something. That doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm going to take the facts that I see and then make an opinion based on them. When it's one-sided and you're not trying to offer your opinion on it, like, how do you avoid, because I've struggled with this when I've tried to do something like straight down the line because I just am not opinionated about it. Like, how do you avoid it feeling like a copy of a press release, you know?
Yeah, I think, you have to get quotes from both sides if there are two sides, you know. Try to get the story for both sides as best you can. It's really hard sometimes, though, to get a hold of people or to get people to talk to you. Jeff is really, really good at that. But sometimes I struggle with that. But then I guess I try to present things like in a timeline format, like especially on like a security issue or
TikTok post.
What?
I call that a TikTok post.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It still is kind of an art, making sure that you don't include any opinions, but sometimes I'll write an opinion piece too. So I try to, we have a category for editorials.
And oh, really?
Yeah. So I try to just check the category when it is an editorial. But it's rare that I write one.
Why is that? Why does Jeffro write more opinionated stuff than you do? And for people listening, probably know if this podcast interests you, but WP Tavern is two primary writers, you, Sarah, and then Jeff Chandler. And Jeff Chandler started the site many years ago, and then he sold it to Matt Mullenweg. I don't remember what year, 5 years ago or something like that. And then after about a year, he actually came back to work full-time. Did y'all start full-time close to the same time, or did you come in after he was already full-time?
He started in March 3 years ago, and then I started in September.
Okay. So the purchase was probably closer to 4 years ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think you tend to do fewer editorials than Jeffro?
I don't know. I think that's just his style. He's a personality, you know? And people enjoy his style, and they've come to appreciate that over the years. So I've never had a terribly opinionated style, although I have to really guard myself from writing in an adversarial tone, which comes really naturally to me. So that's one thing that I'm really super conscious about. And we try not to make things more drama than what they are. But, you know, the WordPress community has a lot of drama, and sometimes that's news. So that happens. It
dramatize itself. I know Jeff has struggled with this. I know I've struggled with this. So I'm curious what it's been like for you. But I've definitely gone through funks or periods where I feel like I'm nearing burnout or something like that, or I'm just sick of writing about certain types of stuff. And I know Jeff's felt the same way many times. He actually did a post recently about coming up on his 3-year mark and said some pretty funny stuff on his personal blog in regards to that, like his dislike and using quotes from people. And sometimes he just wants to shoot from the hip. Do you ever get into these funks or these situations where you just really want to mix up the way you're doing your writing? Because you seem to be a lot more consistent in the way that you, you know, just knock stuff out than me and Jeff.
I try to fight against getting into any kind of a funk because I know that it prevents me from doing my job. And even times when I take like 2 weeks off for vacation, it's really hard to get right back into writing every day, multiple articles per day, because you just get out of the habit. So I feel like the more I stay in the habit, the more it's in my blood to publish every day, to hit that button every day. And if I don't, I feel like extreme guilt, and which is bad, but my husband is always like, you know, writers sometimes need a day for planning or, you know, interviews or whatever, and I try to be okay with that, but I don't like days when I don't publish, and I don't like getting out of the habit, so I try to keep going with that and just try not to be just too emotionally involved in the stories, because that can really drain you, you know, when you get involved with people and their emotions are invested in the community and their businesses. And there's just a lot riding on some of the events that happen. And so if you can kind of stay detached from that, you'll be better off as far as keeping yourself from getting emotionally drained by the news and the community.
Yeah. Ooh, man, you're getting me towards something that I think would be fun to talk about. And it kind of goes into pitching a little bit, but you talked about the way you write about a story and the fact that it affects people. My tendency there, because I really prefer being positive when I write. Mm-hmm. And if I'm writing something negative, it's probably because it's already escalated to a point to where I feel like I need to write about it. Or it's a company or someone that's so well established or did something pretty out there that requires, I feel like it requires covering. But typically, if I just think someone has a product or whatever that I don't really feel like is on all cylinders, I just prefer not to cover it rather than to cover it negatively. So I do actually try to keep stuff that I write about positive if I'm affecting if especially when it's like from one person or, you know, like someone's side project or something like that. I really prefer not to like say, hey, here's this thing and it sucks. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So do y'all do something similar? Like do you choose not to cover something if you feel like it's just not really hitting the marks? Or if someone asks you to write about something and how do you handle that, you know?
I think we just decide up front whether it's newsworthy or not. You know, like something like a plugin's reviews are tanking because they don't support their plugin anymore. Or people think a plugin is abandoned or that kind of situation. You know, it's a really negative situation, but it's news and it affects people. So I keep in the back of my mind that we're a newspaper. So that makes it a lot easier to cover that stuff that that is, you know, negative news. Cause we're not, I mean, people don't want to just read sunshine stories all the time. They want to know it's a living, breathing ecosystem. People want to know what's happening, what's dying, what's successful, what puts people off in business. They want to know those things. So we try to cover all of it.
Yeah. And no, I agree with that. Those are more established scenarios. I'm kind of referring to the type of situation where someone, maybe they pitch you in an email and they're like real enthusiastic and they're like, this is a thing that I did. And you check it out and it's just not there, you know? It's like not really the type of thing you would recommend someone to put on a site or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I tend to not write a post and say, hey, you know, I checked this out and I don't, you know, I want to write something about it because I spent a couple hours checking it out.
Right.
I tend to try to just not write directly about a product, but instead I'll take what I got out of it, like, you know, a bad user experience or something. Mm-hmm. And I'll write about how I feel like people can make better user experiences, you know, and not necessarily reference this product directly.
Oh, okay.
Do y'all do stuff like that? Or like, how do you handle a, a bad request for a post. You know what I mean? Like where you just feel like something's not good.
Yeah, in that case, when it comes from a pitch, Jeff and I are a little bit different on this. He'll take the time to go through the plugin, and if it doesn't work or isn't really up to snuff, he will mention everything that's wrong with it. And that's his style, and people like that. You know, like if they want to read a review, it's not just because it's something outstanding.
Do y'all tend to do that with new products too, or is it usually like something established and you're writing about it for the first time?
New or established, I think. Just, you know, if a request is interesting to you and you take the time to test it out and look at it, and you know, then you want to write about it. I tend to not do that. In the past, I've written reviews of new things that I think people are going to love and that are exciting, and you know, like Kingmaker style posts. Just this is Easy Digital Downloads. You guys should all check it out. Like I think I was one of the first people to write about Easy Digital Downloads. I'm pretty proud of that. But you know, there's different things that like that take off because you write about them and a community forms around them. And people see the value in what someone's made. And sometimes, you know, that wouldn't have happened unless we had written about that. But I tend to, if I test a plugin and it sucks or it's terrible or broken, I'll just write back to the person and say, this isn't really ready for showtime. I don't think it's something our users would enjoy yet, you know, so or our readers rather would enjoy yet. So maybe you can polish it up and we can take a look at it later.
Do y'all spend more time on checking out stories and in the end rejecting them? Or would you say you have more stuff that comes through that turns out it's worth telling a story about?
We don't check out everything that comes through because, I mean, we just get like hundreds of emails a week. So
yeah,
we can't even respond to all of them anymore.
I got one to you recently.
Really?
Yeah, it was... they sent me two. One was to Post Status and one was to WP Travern, I think. But it was through my contact form, so I didn't follow up on it for you, but I should have forwarded it to you.
That's okay. Yeah, I don't know. Lately, I haven't gotten very much via email that I'm interested in checking out. It's been just, you know, hearing about something on Twitter or Instinct of this thing looks cool. And even people don't always reach out to the media, and that seems to be the case lately for a lot of things that we've written about.
Yeah, I feel like, and I don't know why this is, but for more established companies, it seems to be they'd rather have it on their own terms. You know, like they don't really want sneak peeks of it. I actually struggle with this the most with Automattic. They tend to be incredibly private with pre-release type of stuff. But it's not just them, and it always surprises me because you'd think they'd want more people taking a look at it ahead of time and whatnot. But I do agree in terms of just cold emails and stuff. I have a lot more bad pitches than I have good ones. So what would you recommend to people for improving their pitches?
You mean via email? I think,
yeah, if somebody's going to send a contact form request or something, there's a guy outside he's blowing my porch leaves. I don't know who it is.
Oh, I can't hear it at all. That's good.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So if, you know, people email you a cold email, like how is someone going to get your attention with a cold email and compel you to write about their thing?
If they tell me what kind of problem their thing solves, then that's probably one of the best things. And also if they include a lot of the information that one might need for an article, like who founded this, when did they start working on it? If it's commercial, like how much are they selling it for? And also, you know, quotable answers to my questions. Some people will answer your questions, but you can't print their answers because they're not good quotes. So, they just don't know. They're shooting themselves in the foot. So, and then some people are so quotable that you know, you want to use everything they say, but you don't want them to lead the story. It's your voice writing the story. So yeah, it's just, you know, be quotable, include information that makes it easy for the writer to write about your company, your product, or your project, and tell people what problem it solves. And I think that's sums it up.
One of the things that I tend to be picky about, and I think y'all are willing to give more of a pass, is the assets that they have. Like, I really like to have good imagery. And I'm curious, I mean, do y'all just have a stock photo service that you use sometimes? Because a lot of these stories, it's tough to make like a good post image out of something. So what do y'all use when you're creating post images?
I just opt for like free photo sites, and usually something that's photographic. I don't really like illustrations that much. I think photographs grab people, and I take a lot of time looking for them. And that's actually an enjoyable part of my process, because I don't, you know, it doesn't require as much brain power as just looking at photos and finding something that you think is going to.
So I'm looking at an example, and recently you wrote about Butterbean, which is a yet another post-Metabox framework by someone I think we both admire, Justin Tadlock. And you have a hat full of beans. how do you find something like that?
I think I went to like photopin.com, which has like all the Flickr photos that are licensed for use. And I've searched Butterbean.
That's funny. I've never even heard of Photobin. So are there any things that you have, like, you wish you didn't have to do or wish weren't limited by in terms of writing about WordPress stuff? Because I know that, you know, every now and then I envy, you know, not being able, like, I feel like I have a lot of flexibility, but I still feel like I have some restrictions that I wish I didn't have, you know? Are there things that you wish you could just let go of more? It could be like simple things. It doesn't have to be super deep.
Like what? Give me an example.
I'll give you an example of one that I felt liberated by. So when I left just doing free posts and I started doing an email format, mm-hmm. I started doing much more short form and much more like off the hip, check this out, it's interesting, or whatever. And it kind of eliminated my need to like get like this 3-paragraph minimum 7th grade essay style blog posts written. Like, here's your 300 words where 40 words matter. Mm-hmm. I could just give 40 words. And I felt pretty liberated by that. And it's one of my favorite things about the writing format that I'm able to use now. It's like, I'd rather the words that I offer to all be valuable rather than feeling like I'm have some kind of requisite intro, outro, quote, you know, description that's going to make Google happy and that's going to make, I don't know, the blog format happy, you know? Do you run into that ever?
Not anymore.
In that zone.
I used to write a lot of product copy back in the day before I worked at the tavern. So that really influenced my tone, to where my tone was very salesy. Whenever I reviewed anything or wrote about anything, it was like, I felt like a used car salesman on the inside. And I had to overcome that. I'm still overcoming that sometimes. Occasionally people will be like, the way you wrote about this thing is far too promotional. And they're right. You know, I don't know why, but that's part of my style to have to rein in sometimes. Mm-hmm. I really consciously, but it's also liberating, you know, just writing about the facts and not having to sell anything whatsoever. So that's liberating for me. And I don't really feel tied to any sort of length for posts. I wish I could write more long form posts. It takes me a while though to form a real opinion about something. I don't have these just instant reactions. I always feel like I don't know enough of the story to form a decent opinion. So that's one thing that I wish I had, you know, endless time to research all my posts and write better long form articles. But, you know, it just doesn't happen as much as I'd like.
Speaking of, you know, length of posts and number of posts, Do y'all have internal goals or requirements that either you set for yourselves or Matt sets for you or something in terms of success, or is it page views? Like, how do y'all measure success on WP Tavern, and how do you keep accountability?
I'm not really sure. Like, I shoot for multiple posts per day, but then sometimes there are ones that are just take all day to interview people and to do the background research, and you just have to be okay with having just that one sometimes. But I shoot for multiple posts per day, and we just try to capture as much of it as we can. We don't have any like hard and fast rules about this. I think just general community engagement is a good metric. I mean, comments are kind of an indicator of that, but then a lot of times the conversation will be on Twitter or even post out of Slack because people don't want to jump into the comments. So, mm-hmm. You know, it on occasion the conversation is somewhere else, but it was a story that influenced people to talk to others about it. So I try not to get too worked up about it when everyone's discussing a story and post out of Slack instead of our comment form.
I always like that.
I know. I know you never discourage it, I've noticed.
Oh, definitely not. Why would I ever say go to WP Tavern and comment on it instead of talking about it here in my community? How does it work with Matt then? Like, because y'all work for Audrey Capital, but that's owned by Matt, and Matt is definitely the most influential person in our community. Is it? What's that called? A laissez-faire attitude? Like, is he non-influential, or how do you interact with your boss, or know when you're doing a good job, or have reviews, or anything like that? Because you're not really running your own business, but you're supposed to be independent from your boss, who is the most influential person on the most influential parts of the project and the most influential company on the project. So how do y'all deal with that?
Well, Matt is really hands-off, and I think he, you know, fundamentally believes in a free press in general. So he never tells us what to write about. I think the only things he's ever mentioned are like Oxford comma issues. He has pretty strong opinions on that.
He's pro Oxford comma, I hope.
And then we're not really on the Tavern. We're not supposed to promote things that are not GPL licensed, because mm-hmm. They can be really, you know, damaging to the WordPress community. So that's really the only editorial guideline for the most part. Apart from, you know, just general like get sources and that kind of thing, you know, that you would do for any publication. But, you know, once in a while, I've forgotten that, and I will do this entire interview with somebody and forget to ask, you know, are your add-ons GPL licensed? And I find out they're not. And like 50% of the time, we convince people to change their licensing. Or I do, just because I want to still run my interview, right? Yeah.
Because you believe in the GPL? I'm just kidding.
But, yeah, then sometimes, you know, you have to really note, like, what the licensing is on a product. But other than that, we don't have real strict guidelines.
So how, from a just basic career standpoint, how do y'all manage like performance reviews and know if you're being a good employee? Or that's what I've always been most confused about with y'all's setup, you know? Like, how do you be an employee in that type of environment? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know exactly. I internally always feel like I'm never doing a good enough job. So I have like an internal drive that is constantly telling me that. And I almost never feel like I've done the best job that I could. You know, I always wish I had more time to do more or write better stories. And I always feel like I'm putting stories out there too fast. You know, I mean, we have to keep publishing, but I'm really perfectionist. I want to read my stories like 10 times before I put them out. And, mm-hmm. That's just not a realistic thing to expect. But between us, you know, we give feedback to each other, Jeff and I. So, you know, whenever.
I thought you were saying between us as in like me and you.
Oh, no.
Cast audience.
This is a public podcast.
I was like, bring it on. Bring me the secrets. It's just us and a couple thousand listeners.
Yeah, Jeff and I give each other feedback, and that helps. And we just try to make each other better writers. So,
what do you see as some of the bigger challenges? And by the way, this isn't supposed to be just an interview format, so I apologize if I'm asking all the questions. I'm genuinely curious, but feel free to throw it back in my face if you want. But I mean, what do you think some of our bigger challenges are in the WordPress news space?
Well, our challenges or community challenges?
Like community challenges. Our collective people who write things about WordPress.
I think sometimes the community can be rather insular, and it can be difficult to get stories. You have to go out and find stories that aren't ones that everyone's already talking about. There a lot of companies that are constantly putting out press releases and, you know, pushing for media attention, and you know, that's always there. But then finding the WordPress users who have really exciting stories is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I've always thought similarly. Another thing that I've run into is people, a lot of times, they just kind of assume that I already know about something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know this story, and it's pretty awesome, and it would have been great to write about, you know?
Yeah.
But you find out once it's kind of out of the timeline to where it would have made the right story.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think one of my things, just shout out to people listening to this, is we probably don't know what you know. I'm actually pretty sure in some cases companies or, you know, people that talk about things, like sometimes we're the last people that they want knowing about what they have going on. not always. Like sometimes they just don't realize how interesting their story is or how fascinating a case study might be in terms of like a site they built or technology they're using or something like that. I find a lot of those stories really interesting, and you just don't hear about them a lot of times. And yeah, it'd be... I definitely agree that getting the stories that aren't people's press releases is definitely a challenge. And in my experience, that typically comes from relationships and building relationships with people. How do you guys manage relationships with people in the WordPress community, whether it's WordPress core or, you know, people that work at some company or a developer or designer or something like that?
Jeff is really good at managing relationships. I don't know. He just has a sort of an instinct for doing that. And somehow he gets people to tell him things that they shouldn't sometimes. I mean, it's amazing to me. It's not a talent that I have. I don't depend on relationships as much. I wish that I could, and I need to form more relationships, which means I need to go to more events, than I have been. But a lot of times my stories are from things that I see on Twitter, just kind of the paying attention style stories that people could know if they were paying attention, but they're not. So I'm writing about it so that they can have it just sent to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the style of stories that I usually focus on, because, you know, the relationship style stories take a long time to build a relationship where somebody will tell you something that you know, that you're cautious about writing about. And Jeff has had many, many years to build relationships with people that are now, you know, resulting in a lot of good connections. So I envy that about him for sure. And also in your setup, it seems like it's easier to build relationships with people, you know, given that you have like sponsors and people who are, they have a reason to be really involved in the industry community. So I envy that sometimes, but, you know, I think everybody has their strengths.
Speaking of secret ways of finding out what's going on in an observatory manner, I think we both have our strategies for how we try to get a beat on things that are public but not advertised yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make a deal with you, and if you share with me one of your secret places that you go. I'll share one with of mine with you.
Okay.
You don't have to take me up on it, but this is just my trade opportunity here that our listeners can take advantage of.
Well, I don't really have any secret places, though. That's the thing.
Well, I'm not secret, but like kind of like a go-to maybe that you check out, like one of your either daily or weekly or whatever, like let's go see what's going on over here, this public venue, but that I like to utilize for finding potential stories.
Well, all of mine really are public venues. I mean, I'll tell you all of them. I read Twitter every single day, like every post that goes up, I read of the people that I follow. I go to the Slack channel sometimes, not as much as I used to, the WordPress project Slack channels. I look at every single plugin that comes through the WordPress plugin directory. So
that's the one that I thought you were going to tell me, because that's actually finding the new WordPress plugins, like as they're released, is a little harder.
Well, if you click on like the latest or the newest ones.
Actually, I don't think that one exists anymore in terms of straight on the plugin directory.
I have it bookmarked. So I still go there. I'll send it to you.
It's browse/latest. Is that right? I can't remember where it is.
It's
I've done that on the plugin track because you can see commits to plugins.
Uh-huh. It's plugins browse/new.
New, that's what it is, yeah.
And then I get like a notice via email anytime a new theme is added. So I look at all of them, just everything that comes through, and I try to find things that are interesting there.
That's amazing. I quit caring about themes a long time ago in terms of like the ones that just get pushed to the directory.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff that goes through. It's like there's no kind of design qualification there.
Yeah. You know who used to do that? This is another Matt Mullenweg acquisition, but the Weblog Tools Collection, I think they might have automated it, but like they had a new themes and plugins post that went out like every day. That was pretty interesting.
I don't remember that.
So in trade for your browse new, I'll trade a tool that I use that it's kind of a backup for me, or it's like I was completely gone all day and didn't see Twitter or any other sources like that.
Mm-hmm.
But one that I like in terms of at least getting an idea of what the consensus of people that I follow shared is Nuzzle, which is an app that follows your I think it can follow Twitter and Facebook activity, but I use it for Twitter. So based on the people I follow, it gives me top stories based on the number of times it was shared from the people that I follow. So like the thing that was shared like 15 times is going to be at the top of my little Nuzzle email. And it's pretty good if I missed the day, but actually the best stories I get typically – if I get them off Twitter, they might have only been shared by like one person.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they're still pretty undiscovered by Nuzzle. So it's a good backup tool, but it's not my go-to.
It's just like a thermometer for what the temperature is.
Yeah, make sure I didn't. Like I went to the beach last week, and so Nuzzle was pretty helpful because it, you know, just gave me an idea of what's everybody care enough about that they're going to tweet it. But yeah, so that'll be my secret. which is not too big of a secret, I guess.
That's a pretty good secret. Yeah, mine are just all public places. It's like, I don't know. It's just like, you know, a regular journalist would go down to the courthouse and check out the arrest records or...
You're talking about regular, like, good journalists of years past.
Yeah.
Newspapers don't have the journalists like that anymore.
Yeah, my husband used to be one. He, his first job out of journalism school was the editor of the Hugo Daily News and the Choctaw County Times in southern Oklahoma. And he used to go to the courthouse, go to like town meetings and stuff. And that's where, you know, you found out news that is public, but not everyone's paying attention. So, you know, there are just a lot of things in the WordPress world that are the same way. People have a very limited amount of time. I mean, obviously, this is how the post status newsletter is geared. You know, people have a limited amount of time. They can't follow everyone on Twitter. There are a lot of public news sources that they can't follow. So making that available for people is kind of our job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been probably in terms, you know, some people don't even read the newsletter that are members. Like, they're there for the Slack, or they join to get a deal or something. But I tend to focus my energy on the newsletter, and I have some people that, like, it could have been shared 150 times on Twitter and they would never have seen it, because they're like, if it wasn't in the newsletter, then I didn't see it. So it mm-hmm. it makes me remember my responsibility sometimes, that even if something feels like the story's just been beat to death on social media, a good percentage of my readers are paying me to make sure that I include that story,
right?
Or at least a link to the story, like a TLDR of what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And also regarding, like, old school, this information is available type of journalism, I actually feel like in the WordPress world, issues are pretty well covered, especially compared to other types of micro industries.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the news that's out there is just like very little real conversations or digging into stories and checking back on like follow-ups and things like that. And I feel like both WP Tavern and PostStatus do that a pretty good bit. And in the broader digital media landscape, a lot of times like the story begins and then dies on the first time it was announced, and it's based on like tweets and, you know, very simple stuff, and like very few publications really dig into their news. And unfortunately that tends to be true in local news now too.
Mm-hmm.
So actually for the most part, I feel pretty good about where the WordPress news world is. I'd like to take a break real quick, and as we do on the PostStatus podcast, thank one of our partners. This week we are sponsored by Valet. Valet.io is the website. Our mutual friend, Mason James, is the owner of this company. Valet helps keep your clients happy and coming back. They offer expert services and keep the websites they manage functioning flawlessly. They offer preventative care that provides peace of mind around the clock. And for more information, you can go to valet.io. And I appreciate Valet for being a PostStatus partner. They're actually a fun story, because I lumped them in several years ago. I covered like multiple companies and talked about kind of the rise of WordPress management services. And they've really decided to kind of go beyond the maintenance and management side of things. And they've kind of escalated the way they do their work to where they have shifted into this digital partner, I'll put that in quotes, digital partner category. So it's been interesting to see the way that they've evolved. So I'm happy to have them as a sponsor, and they have great swag at Pressnomics. They gave luggage tags out.
Nice.
Play on Valet. So I actually use the Valet luggage tag now in my suitcase. And you and Mason worked together at one point, huh?
We did. We worked together for a few years at WPMU, and I got to know him there. And then I've just been following his business after that. It's really exciting. I guess now it's like a multi-million dollar WordPress support business. So it's really cool that he's been able to build something on his own, just out of, you know, what he's always been really excellent person at listening to, you know, people's needs and finding a way to, you know, solve problems.
Yeah, they've really grown a lot. So I want to shift into the home side of things in regards to what we do. We have similar timelines life-wise, because we have babies that are how far apart? 2 months or something?
I think like 1 month.
1 month. Okay, so yours is...
For 2 months. 2 months.
Mine's turning a year old in 12 days.
Okay.
And yours is a couple months behind that?
Yeah, 10 and a half months.
Okay. And both of us also work remotely. So I feel a little guilty, because I'm pretty sure you keep your daughter at home and work at the same time. And we send my son to daycare, because my wife works full-time as well at a hospital. So it would be on me completely if we kept him here. So you work remotely, and your daughter stays with you at the house, right?
Yes. I have to admit,
what is that like? Because that is amazing.
When I found out that you were having a baby too, back before these kids were born, I was like, yes, you know, he's not going to have as much time to write news. Because, you know, we were really competitive at the time. And I was like, I was afraid, you know, that my quality would really suffer. And so I was relieved to know that you were going to have a baby too. So you'd have some sleepless nights affecting your output.
Oh, yeah. So how have you managed remote work and also working full time with a kid at home? I mean, what's it like?
It's really tough. I still feed her. So, that's part of the reason why, you know, it wouldn't be convenient to send her to daycare, cause she would never take a bottle. So that's just really. Yeah, that's a really big reason. And we tried to, but she's a lot of work during the daytime. She's not the kind of child that likes to play with her toys by herself. She's very social, interactive. So she's never fallen asleep just playing toys. And it's really a struggle to get her to take naps and stuff. So I do most of my best work after she goes to bed at 7 o'clock. I usually write my stories, the ones that take a long time after 7 p.m. And that's just the time that I know that I'm going to have uninterrupted quiet time. And I don't get as much work done during the actual daytime hours when she's awake.
So do you do like your kind of curation and communication during the day and then dig and write at night?
Yeah, a lot of interviews and curation and writing, you know, writing quick stories during the day that are, you know, just basic news pieces. Anything that's really in-depth, I usually write that at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't have any free time. I mean, I do on the weekends, but it's right now it's worth it for me to do that, to not have to send her to daycare. So that's just how it is. And I'm a pretty homebody type person anyways, so it doesn't affect me as much as it might affect someone else.
And Marion also works from home, right?
Right. And he's a very social person, so at night he goes out almost every single night to meet with his friends and hang out, because he can't be around the house all day long, and or else he'll just go nuts.
And I guess that works well for y'all, because do y'all work in the same office during the day?
No, we have separate offices, but we're constantly interacting.
Just around each other.
Trading the baby off and, hey, I need to get this thing written really quick. Can you manage her? And so, yeah, it's definitely a lot of teamwork. Our teamwork has improved drastically because it had to.
Yeah. What do you think I guess that's kind of a challenge and a benefit of remote work, right? When you have a kid at home. Before y'all had a baby, what would you say your biggest challenges were working remotely, especially as a couple working remotely and working in the same business? That's almost too difficult to imagine for me. I feel like my wife would be a very hard boss to work for, because I would totally consider her my boss.
Yeah, well, when we used to run the client business together, we were working together a lot more. So, and we actually were living in a house where we shared an office at that time. And that was just, that was awful. we would fight about music or any little thing, but now we have our own offices so that it works out a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So you send your son to daycare during the day then?
Yeah. So he's in daycare from about 7:30 to 5 most days, like 4:30 or 5. And so I'm home by myself working remotely. So I used to be just like what you said, like, and I kind of trained those muscles when I was not working full time in WordPress, or I wasn't doing post status full time rather, where I called it my 10 to 2 time. So like, after my wife went to bed, because I was a night owl and she wakes up really early, I would work from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. on post status stuff when I was doing post status part time. Mm-hmm. And I could really dig deep and write like a long story, and no one's bugging you at that time except for Australian people.
Right.
When we had our, and I kind of transferred some of that over when I started post status full time, and my nights were still more effective. Like that's, I would more nights than not, I would send the newsletter out at like 1 a.m. or something, because mm-hmm. that's when I finally finished it. And it really changed when we had a kid, because, you know, you're exhausted by like 10 p.m.
Right.
So my 10 to 2 time basically completely disappeared. So I would have to, I basically have to be done for the day, minus maybe I can get to the computer for 20 or 30 minutes to wrap something up. I basically have to be done by the time we pick up our son from daycare. And if I'm not, then the newsletter can't go out that day or has to wait. And the worst feeling is when you have stuff written and then it doesn't go out into the email, because for PostStatus, it's stuff is public on the website for logged in users, but that's not how anyone reads it. Everyone reads it through the email.
Right.
So that's been my biggest challenge throughout the last year of having a kid, is making efficient use of the time that he's at daycare. And if I don't make efficient use of that time, then I feel super guilty, because, you know, we're paying a small fortune to send our kid to daycare every month. So I feel like I need to make good use of that time where he's gone.
Right.
So I had to completely transition. I've never been a morning person, and now I have not set an alarm in a year. And I can't remember the last time I got up after 7 a.m. Between 5:30 and 6:30.
Definitely same here. I haven't set an alarm in a year either. Well, except for the occasion when we had to fly somewhere, you know.
Yeah, so you got up at like 2.
Yeah, like an early flight, but no need to set an alarm anymore.
Yeah, we have a custom alarm clock. He usually gets us up at least once during the night, and then pretty early in the mornings. I think working remotely with families is a really common occurrence in our industry. And it's a tough balance. Like it's obviously a huge benefit, because you have tremendous flexibility. Do you ever long for an office or anything like that, or long for like a more traditional work environment?
No, I really come to terms with it, I think, because a lot of people, they always say, you know, they grow up so fast, the years go by so fast. But for me, I feel like I've lived about 7 years in the past 10 months, because I've been awake so long, and my child is with me like just every minute that she's awake, you know? So I think it's different for people who, you know, they go to work and they send their kids to daycare or whatever, and then they only have those like evening hours to see their child and to interact. And especially once, you know, they start going to school and everything, that's how it is. They only have that small bit of time. So it feels like they're growing up faster because you're not with them every minute. So I feel like it's a pretty good benefit that I can, you know, take care of her and, you know, make sure that she's learning and, you know, just make sure that she's healthy and okay and still work at the same time. It's really, really hard. Like sometimes it's like an absolute battle to get through the day and to get anything done. But it's amazing what you can do when you have less time. Somehow you make yourself get it all done.
Yeah. Shout out to you, because I didn't really think too much about parenthood and work, you know, prior to having a kid. Now I obviously do, but it's just a different level between moms and dads, and moms that work are like super moms. It's amazing. My wife, the amount of effort that she puts in day to day, plus, you know, coming home and then having the kid, it's an incredible amount of work. So the fact that you have the output that you do is ridiculously impressive and holds me accountable. I know that. If I feel like I'm not getting the same type of the same depth of coverage that you guys are, then I feel like I'm really screwing it up. Considering the amount that you have going on. So I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes talking about quick hits, I guess. And we can kind of both share, I guess. So one would be, what is the next event that you're going to be at, and what are your favorite types of WordPress events?
For sure, the next event I'll be at is WordCamp US. I may be going to a couple, you know, in between, but I haven't decided for sure. Oh, no, wait. I am going to WordCamp OKC in July, the first one that they're having.
And condolences to your basketball team.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Dates our podcast a little bit.
It was pretty heartbreaking, but.
Yeah. For non-basketball fans, Oklahoma City was up 3-1 and couldn't close it. So Golden State moved on. Y'all had a championship in your grasp, you know.
I know. It's happened before as well. It was pretty devastating. I mean, they're a young team. They're like, you can't predict whether they're going to be on or not, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they just don't show up.
So you're going to be at WordCamp OKC, WordCamp US, and then do you have a particular type of WordCamp or a particular type of WordPress event or like activity at WordPress events that you enjoy the most?
I like to go to events where I can connect with a lot of international users because I feel like I miss so much news that's not happening here in the US. Mm-hmm. So being able to connect with those people one-on-one, and then later on, even if your stories come later through email, you have that, you know, that connection that you made at an event. And that's where I think a lot of interesting WordPress news is.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think that if we're sucking at something, it's probably fully covering international WordPress activity. And not just like actual internationalization, but the tremendous communities that exist in countries all over the world. It's right. Amazing. I know I definitely fail at that, even though there's tons of interest in people that want to be involved in the broader community. A lot of people internationally feel like it's difficult to break into the WordPress community, quotes, because of, I guess, both language and time zone differences, all sorts of things. But mm-hmm. It's certainly a challenge. And then if you wanted to give one tip to, let's say, product makers out there, what would it be?
Product makers.
Like plugins, themes, yeah. Services.
I would say don't just develop something that you are passionate about. Like do some really solid research before you turn out a product that everybody else has already made and that you could have maybe contributed on their open source project.
That's a good one. Mine is to look at your user experience design as much as you're looking at your code quality.
I saw you tweet that.
Yeah, I was on a little bit of a high horse. And then do you have any questions or anything like that that you feel like I should answer? Because I've kind of been putting it to you so far.
No, I don't. But I have a message for Post Status members.
Uh-oh. Okay.
If you ever want to get in touch with the tavern.
Wait, hold on. Time out. Are you about to plug people's... Are you about to try to steal my scoops?
No, not scoops, but there are some things that I...
All right, sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. They're not necessarily scoops, but I think there are some things that, you know, maybe they're not going to be able to get your attention on, or maybe you feel like is not really a good story or a good fit mm-hmm. for your publication, but might be a good fit for the tavern. So if you get shot down by Brian, our doors are always open.
Oh, I deserve that. That's fair. Do you have any other plugs that you want to make?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, you can find Sarah daily on WPTavern.com, or you can also find Sarah in Post Status Slack.
That's right.
Polly Plummer, she's there. We have WP Tavern spies in Post Status, and we like having them. Appreciate the work that you do. You do a great job. I'm sure that we have critiques of one another's publications that we could make, but I think together, there's a nice balance there.
Yeah, post status definitely keeps us on our toes. And we appreciate it that there are frenemies and competition out there. Otherwise, it's easy to just, you know, take it easy.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. We're privileged to do what we do, for sure. So thanks for joining me today. And I guess, speaking of Twitter, your handle on there is Polly Plummer as well.
That's right.
And quickly, what does that mean?
It's from a C.S. Lewis book. I've had the handle, I think, for almost, 15, 20 years. I don't know.
I thought it was there was another reference for Polly Plummer.
It's from The Magician's Nephew.
Oh, yeah, The Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you can go to poststatus.com/club and join the club, and we'll catch everybody next time.